Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome, everybody, to another edition of Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today. With free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Find something for you at shirtosaurus.com. Also brought to you by Gamefly, your destination for new and used video games. Browse the collection of thousands of games for you to keep as long as you want without worrying about late fees. Then, when you're done, just send it back with the postage page envelope for a new one, or pay a lot less than in-store prices and keep it forever. Sign up for free for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Well, now that we've got all the advertisements out of the way, I think that means it's time for a TV show to start. Justin?
Hit it!
Pilot Party! Pilot Party!
Pilot Party!
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based on only the first episode. Why only the first episode? Because my attention span is only allows for one episode. Squirrel! Squirrel. All right, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, y'all remember the 2003 film League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah.
The movie the movie that got Sean Connery to retire from acting.
Yeah, picture that, but creepier and with better writing, and you have Penny Dreadful.
Nice.
Okay.
I'm on board.
London, September 1891. The show starts with a single mom being ripped out of her bathroom window by an unseen force in the middle of the night. She and her daughter are killed and dismembered. Not on screen. You see her being ripped out of the window on screen, but everything else is alluded to and the aftermath is shown. So keep that in mind.
Mm.
The next day, we meet American gunslinger Ethan Chandler putting on a marksman show for the good folks of London, telling lies that he was in Custer's army and the only survivor, spinning tall tales and entertaining the crowd. Later, he's called out on his lies by Miss Vanessa Ives, an enigmatic woman with a penchant for fortune-telling. She offers him a job for his services as a sharpshooter. That night, he meets up with her and Sir Malcolm Murray. His daughter has been taken, and they're trying to find her. The people they're there to meet are actually vampires, and a fight ensues. Although, while tough to kill, these vampires can be taken out with regular bullets, a meat hook through the face, and a sword through the back.
Huh.
They begin their search of a nearby area for Sir Malcolm's daughter. They don't find her, but they find the head vampire of the group. He's killed and taken to an underground mortuary where medical students are allowed to work on cadavers. A bit of a historical note, it was really hard for medical students to find bodies to do autopsies on to practice their trade, so a lot of them were obtained through less than desirable means. Let's just put it that way.
Questionably sourced.
Yes. It is here that they meet with Victor Frankenstein. The vampire's body is covered with tattoos from the Egyptian Book of the Dead. After some prodding, Frankenstein agrees to help them with their search for more answers. The next night, two big things happen for the plot. Sir Malcolm is visited by his daughter, Mina, who has now apparently been turned into a vampire. Elsewhere, we see Frankenstein go into a secret lab in his home, turn on some machines, and brings a dead body back to life. End of show.
Hmm.
this show has a lot of things for the classic monster buff to get into. It's creepy yet entertaining, gory yet not gruesome. Timothy Dalton, Eva Green, and Josh Hartnett are amazing. I especially love what they did with Frankenstein's creature. I mean, not going to spoil it, but it's a departure from the usual depiction of the creature. So, you know, typically you think of Frankenstein, the creature, as, you know, tall, shambling, bolts, you know, scars everywhere, you know. No. Clearly not human in a traditional sense, but not, you're a monster, you know. There's a gray area now. Now for my prediction for the rest of the series. Clearly, with Mina Murray, or as she's known later, Mina Harker, in the novel Dracula, the Big D himself is going to make an appearance. We've already seen Frankenstein's creature, and with the inclusion of the Egyptian tattoos, the mummy can't be far behind. So it's only a matter of time before we're greeted with the Wolfman and the creature from the Black Lagoon. I think the forces of good and the forces of evil are going to mash. A monster mash, if you will. And it's going to be a big smash. I give it 4 undead souls out of 5.
Nice. That sounds like it was a pretty good party.
Yeah, I enjoyed myself.
I was at a different party.
Oh, you were, huh?
Yeah, I was at a different party where I got to see the pilot for Superman and Lois. Which is, you know, on the CW. Brief review.
Pilot party.
Pilot party 2.0? No, not 2.0. We're not rebooting it. Pilot party crasher? Anyway, so this
I am not making a theme song for Pilot Party Crasher.
No, I wouldn't expect you to. So, this is interesting. This was a Tuesday night premiere, and it was CW's biggest ratings in years for this premiere. This is kind of Arrowverse adjacent, same Superman and Lois that we saw in the Arrowverse and in Crisis on Infinite Earths, but there's no mention of anyone else. So I don't know if there are going to be Arrowverse characters that pop up in this or not. It focuses on Superman and Lois are the parents of teen boys, Jonathan and Jordan. One of them is a stellar athlete and popular with all the kids in school. And the other is this kind of emo loner who likes video games, particularly a great gag. We see him playing Injustice 2. Superman versus Raiden from Mortal Kombat. Raiden is kicking the crap out of Superman. Raiden is who Superman's son is playing as because Superman is quote unquote boring. The kids don't know that their dad is Big Blue, at least not yet. And I'm not going to spoil a lot from the pilot. I will just say it's worth watching. It was entertaining. Probably the best live action Superman thing that they have done since Crisis on Infinite Earths, and definitely better than what we got out of Justice League. In fact, Tyler Hoechlin really nails both the bumblish oaf Clark Kent that harkens back to Christopher Reeve's portrayal, as well as a confident but not entirely sure of himself Superman, because he's confident when he's saving the world, but now he's having to deal with teenage sons, and that is a whole different ballgame. We get a great, fantastic nod to the Max Fleischer cartoons. The first time Superman, we get a flashback to the first time Superman shows up and he saves this kid from getting hit by a car. And the pose they use is from Superman's first appearance in Action Comics with the green car.
Nice.
And he's wearing the Fleischer outfit with like the black background and the red S.
Yes.
And God dang if that suit don't look party in live action. So characterizations are all there. There's no real character that you... there is one character you want to punch in the face, but it's a minor character. Everyone else nails their roles. The villain is set up nicely with kind of a twist on an established Superman villain. I highly recommend it. And it's not just the Superman fan in me speaking. That's the comic book fan in me speaking. If you haven't gotten around to it yet, take a look at Superman and Lois. It's streaming for free on CW's app. By the time you hear this, the second episode will have dropped. And trust me when I say it is not your typical CW superhero show. There's no group of quirky side characters who are all like helping give Superman like, you know, advice from like this tech center. There's no stupid relationship drama. This is fun and it's well worth your time.
I hope that your optimism continues through the rest of the episode, rest of the episodes.
Yes, me too. But as I'm not going to do Justin Schtick where I'm going to predict where the show is going, because I don't want to horn in on it. Like I said, party crasher, not party stealer.
Yeah.
Pilot party crasher, stealing Justin's spotlight. Pilot yeah. party crasher, go and kiss my wife. Beep.
Well, while you guys were having fun, I was watching the movie I Care a Lot. I really don't. I don't. Have you, ever watched? Have you ever watched a well put together movie, and every character is awful? Even yes. Peter Dinklage, yes. who can make the most awful characters likable, could not make his character likable.
Oh no.
I Care a Lot is about a con woman who steals from old people. And it's about her rise to power and making it big by turning stealing from old people into a business.
Okay.
There's more to it than that, but that's all I want to share because I hated it just so, so much. It gets a C+ from me because it's well done. But it's not well fun.
Oh. Well, if we're talking about fun, though, can we talk about Alita Battle Angel?
God, yes.
Yeah. So, all right. A little bit of context. I saw this movie for the first time earlier in February, and I tweeted about it, just an innocuous tweet, like, okay, I'm glad I sat down and watched it. It was great. I've been on Twitter for like 11 years. That tweet was the one that went viral. People went nuts. They're like, oh my God, I'm so happy that you watch it, blah, blah, blah. So I promised we'd give it a review on the Deep Cave podcast. Here we are. Alita Army, we hear you. We're going to talk about it. This movie's really good. I don't know what else to say other than that it's visually stunning. I liked the characters. Alita is an android, so she's not human. So she has like this kind of weird oversized Disney princess eye thing going on, but trust me when I say that it translates better than I'm making it sound.
Fair.
It's a visually imaginative film. The combat scenes are great because she ends up kind of becoming a bounty hunter because her, you know, surrogate father is a bounty hunter. There's this sport which is like roller derby but with cyborgs and on rocket skates. And it is awesome. In fact, that's pretty much the best way to describe most of this film is just it is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a couple of nitpicks, but they are nitpicks, minor stuff at most. The love story between her and another character, it feels quick, and that might just be because of how Alita came to be. Her body is found in a junkyard. It's brought back online. She doesn't have any memories of her past life, but she is essentially an all or nothing character in that she feels things passionately and completely and extremely. So when she falls for a guy, she falls hard for a guy to the point of even taking her robotic heart out of her chest and offering it to him, literally offering him her heart because he needs money to get to this wealthy floating city and he doesn't have enough. And she's like, here, sell it. It's a remarkable scene. The whole movie is made up of remarkable scenes. And the end is remarkable in that it teases a sequel that I don't know if we'll ever get. And
it's unlikely.
That's what I wanted to talk about, actually. In the Alita Battle Angel, short review. Yes, loved it. Go see it. But longer discussion topic. Why do first films in a franchise feel the need to tease a sequel when they don't know if they're getting one yet?
The eternal optimism of humanity?
I guess. Yeah, I guess. It angers me so much because there's a whole lot left unfinished at the end of this film. And I know the film wasn't a flop. It did make its money back. I don't know. I'll look up.
It's in debate whether it made its money back because like the break-even point, when you're looking at these, like the break-even points for these movies are sometimes in the hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, like
right.
There's $100 million that somewhere in there, the film's going to break even. And even though this movie made like $400 million at the box office, it's unknown whether the break-even point was 350 or 500.
Yeah. Yeah, million. I was going to get into that. Yeah. So Rosa Salazar is fantastic in the role. But yeah, that's my biggest problem is that, you know, she's pledging vengeance against the big bad and she's pointing a sword toward the big bad's lair. And it's almost like they're locking eyes and they're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, here we go. Here comes the climax and the movie's over. What? And so I immediately hopped on Google, like, is it going to get a sequel? We don't know.
Well, now this being said, it only came out like 2 years ago.
I know, but like, this is like one of those cinematic blue ball moments where, you know, it's all this hype and it's like, yes, let's go. And
is that the new hashtag?
We may never get, yeah, yes, cinematic blue balls. But we may never get resolution.
I think
it just drives
our new segment.
It just drives me nuts whenever films do this because I know that Alita is not the only one to do it. It's just the latest one that I can think of.
It's been since 2019 since I've seen this.
Yeah.
So I'm not remembering probably as well as I should have. But didn't they have like a big climactic moment in the movie? Like when she's on the chains or on the tubes or whatnot and has to save the guy and the guy can't be saved. And yeah, spoiler alert.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tragedy happens. And then the last scene of the movie is her vowing revenge. And, you know, we're like, okay, well, when's the revenge coming? Yeah. Go watch the anime, kid.
Well, because then it kind of falls into the same spot as Green Lantern.
Yes. You know,
which, to be fair to Green Lantern, was a mid-credits or post-credits tease.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, we got a movie beginning and ending, you know, and then we got a tease for a sequel. Or Back to the Future. You know, we have a movie. It's got a beginning and a middle and ending, and then it teases further adventure.
Yes.
I guess the issue here is that we don't have closure really against a particular big bad.
No, it's just she threatens that she's going to get him. And then that's it. That's where the movie ends.
So
I'm going to get you.
So maybe the movie is not a quest for vengeance, but a quest for self. You know, a quest for purpose, as it were.
Right.
You know, because she's resurrected, you know, and it's been hundreds of years that she's been inactive, as best we can tell. The amnesia kind of helps with that. And so it's really about discovering who she is and what she want to be about. It's the Breakfast Club of action movies. We're not really going anywhere. We're just discovering who we are. And at the end of that, then we'll have a direction for where we are to go. How's that for something that you never thought you'd hear?
Yeah.
Alita Battle Angel. The Breakfast Club of robot action movies.
Now, James Cameron and Robert Rodriguez have both said the film could lead to multiple sequels. And they do have plans for Alita Battle Angel 2. They said that back in 2019. But since then, Not much, especially since Disney bought 20th Century Fox, and there's word that it may not fit in with the quote-unquote Disney culture.
Gee, really? But that,
I don't know. I mean,
neither does Deadpool, but we're getting notes that there might
Deadpool
be a third
3.
One.
Yeah, yeah, no, we're getting a Deadpool 3, so I'm holding out hope, if for no other reason than, damn it, I want some closure here, and this movie was a lot better than I... It definitely was better than the box office response it got. Okay. It deserved a bigger response from the box office. Absolutely.
Hmm. All right, then. Justin, you got any thoughts on teasing a sequel?
I kind of agree and disagree with the Back to the Future thing.
Yeah.
Whereas I absolutely agree that you had a full movie, a conclusion, it wrapped everything up nicely, and then it teased something else. But I think that just added to the story. It's like, okay, the adventure's not over with yet, but it was vague enough where it's like, okay, we don't need to know. It's like, something's gotta be done about your kids. Okay, well, okay, fine. It's just it was just kind of a nice tie in to the story. Now, you do, and this is a horrible example, but the movie Mac and Me, where at the end they clearly spelled it out in no uncertain terms. Oh, we'll be back. No, you won't.
No, you won't.
That's just being presumptuous and stupid.
Yeah. Mm. All right. So, I'd like to try something a little new right now. We're still well into Geek Cave 3.0, but just something where I am going to play the character of a tornado, and I am going to tell you about all the trailers I watched this month.
Okay.
And we'll just see what kind of damage occurs. So, Mortal Kombat got a Red Band trailer. A Red Band trailer for Mortal Kombat. Like, there's going to be blood in a Mortal Kombat movie. What the heck, guys? Won't somebody think of the children? I mean, it's not like blood has ever been included in the games. Why would they ever do this? I just don't understand. Justice League, the Snyder Cut. Wow, this is something. There's a black suit Spider-Man. Spider-Man? No, he wasn't in that one. Superman. A black suit Superman. It's hard to tell the difference because of all of the blur effects that are going on. Also, there's a new scene with Joker, because that needed to happen. We live in a society. Thank you. Don't all of us. There was so much slowdown in the action scenes that I think that if you played it at actual speed, the trailer would have only been 30 seconds long. I was starting to think that it was part of the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movie series.
Oh, my God.
Man.
Cruella? Hooray! Another movie to turn a Disney villain into a protagonist. Because nothing says, hey, I want to root for this person, like killing and skinning dogs.
Amen.
Now, that being said, it does at least look, according to the trailer, like it's going to be a descent into madness rather than a rewriting of the character. So hopefully they'll rewrite her descent into madness into something that I can be like, yes, she should definitely have a car crash into the side of a snowy embankment.
See, to me, the trailer looked like Joker, but with animal abuse and a woman.
Huh. Godzilla versus Kong. Yeah, I really like the 1963 movie, cheesy as it is. And this looks like it, you know, has more monster fighting than the last two. Looking at you, last two Godzilla movies. And maybe even there'll be some in the daytime, so we'll be able to see it. I'm looking at you, last two Godzilla movies. Where there's so much black crush to the thing that the only time you could see anything was when nuclear breath was being used. Which was cool, but not good enough. And yet, I still find myself wondering if there's just too much style over substance. And I know, who begs for substance in a kaiju movie? Raises hand sheepishly. So there's the movie Son, S-O-N. I don't know what the hell this is, but every single bit of it was disturbing as shit. And I'm pretty sure I won't be watching it. Hey, speaking of movies I'm pretty sure I won't be watching, The Mighty Ducks. Also known as Bad News Bears, the hockey edition. And finally, we come to Willy's Wonderland. Not a porn. After Balan Wonderworld, I thought this would be a goofy addition. A Nick Cage movie where a dude is tasked with cleaning a theme park, and if he does so overnight, then his car will be fixed. This thing looks fantastic, especially when we find out that Gaff's shock and amaze, the theme park is actually designed to kill whoever's working there overnight. But it's Nick Cage. You can't kill Nick Cage in a theme park. It just can't happen. Or if it does, it happens at the end. Anyway, it looks fantastic in all the craziest ways, and it's punctuated, I think, by the best line of all of these trailers was this Southern sheriff woman going, "We're going to Willy's." I'm just, the way it's said, it's just so perfect. It's just, "We're going to Willy's." I don't know what it means, but by golly, I think I'm going to watch it. I think it actually is already released. So that's a thing. Do you guys have anything
more?
That's
going
all
to
the
Willy's.
Trailers I watched. That's all the movie trailers I watched. There was a whole bunch of video game trailers, but that's the movie trailers I watched.
That was a fun trailer tornado.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. I do have one more thing.
Yeah.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
Did you know that Bill Murray, Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, Charlie Sheen, and Pierce Brosnan all have one thing in common? They were all considered for the role of Batman in the 1989 Tim Burton film.
Oh my God. What?
No, that was before Michael Keaton proceeded to get nuts. But yeah, look it up. They looked at Bill Murray, Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, Charlie Sheen, and Pierce Brosnan as well.
Wow. I have no words.
Yeah. So that's it. That's all I had.
All right. So it is time for the random movie.
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
So by the roll of the dice, I'll be watching next month Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. I have no idea what I'm getting into, but it looks like it has Will Ferrell wearing Viking clothes.
It does. I've not seen it, but I've seen the trailer. This month,
however, I watched the 2009 movie Julie and Julia. So unlike last month's two movies, this film, made up of two movies, was far superior and pleasant to watch. The first movie follows Julia Child, played by the amazing Meryl Streep. And she is living in Paris with her diplomat husband, played by a pre-Dr. Erskine, Stanley Tucci, who encourages her to find a hobby to invest her time. You know, he's got, you know, diplomat business to do. She needs something to do as well. And there's only so much butter you can eat before you have to start using it for other purposes. She, predictably, for those of us born after 1963, takes up cooking. and learns the ways of the French chefs. And over the time of this story, she meets a couple of women who are working on writing a French cookbook for Americans, and she joins that team. And through the ups and downs of life, husband assignments, etc., issues of getting the book published, and the general stuff of life, Julia succeeds. It's, you know, that's a story. Running in parallel with this, cutting back and forth, is the less interesting story of Julie Powell, who works in a cubicle dealing with phone calls relating to the attacks on 9/11. Clearly, this is soul-crushing work, and she's dissatisfied with her life. As she watches not just the fact that she's having to deal with that level of pain every day, but also as she watches the worst friends in the world succeed around her. Seriously, y'all, if we go to a Manhattan restaurant and you put your phone to your face for any reason outside of somebody has just died, I will be pissed. Leave the phone in the purse or pocket, especially if you're getting together specifically to have a meal with these friends.
Yes.
Don't be a douche. Encouraged by her own husband, Julie decides to blog her experience of cooking all 500 plus recipes from Julia Child's cookbook, Mastering the Art of French Cooking. And this also has ups and downs in life. And though Amy Adams throws absolutely everything she can at this to make it interesting, it's just less so. Now, supposedly, I guess, the film's about overcoming adversity in various forms. You know, Julia Child's adversity of being a woman learning French cooking when she doesn't speak French, and she's not a man. But what it really comes out is kind of an idealized biography of Julia Child, where even the things that go wrong don't really go wrong. And then Julie Powell's story, where everything goes wrong until it finally doesn't. I'd argue that the movie more plays like Julie Powell is writing in her mind what she thinks Julia Child's life must have been like. You know, sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows. Now, the story, therefore, is decent. It might be one of Nora Ephron's best works. It's predictable, but it's lovingly so. I mean, we watched the Marvel movies, and there hasn't been a surprise in a Marvel movie since Guardians of the Galaxy. So, you know, and we still watch them and we still love them. This film is the same kind of predictable. You know, we know what's going to happen, but it doesn't take away from how good it is. The actors are doing an excellent job in their roles, and the story is not bad. There are moments of absolute cringe, but ultimately, this is a feel-good movie. It is perfect for one of those lazy nights with a spouse with a bowl of buttered popcorn between you. And at the end of the day, honestly, be like me. It's a good one. So, that, I think, being all, drop us a line, y'all, on Facebook or on Twitter, at Geek Cave Podcast. And tune in to our other offerings. You want me to watch what? Geek Cave TLDR, Retromantics, Geek Cave Plays. And we're brought to you by Shirtosaurus and Gamefly. And I think that covers just about everything. If you found us on any kind of podcast streaming service, make sure that you give us a like, subscribe, rate us. That helps a bit. And so, for Kent Harris, swift as the coursing river, Darren Wright with the force of a great typhoon, Justin White with all the strength of a raging fire, I'm Chad Savage, and I don't remember the rest of the lyrics. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.